Hello and good day, Deeper Daily Podcast listeners. I'm Paul White. It's the 4th of March, and grace and peace to you. I hope you have a wonderful day, and the favor of God hunts you down. Whatever your situation in life is, I'm believing God for good things for you today. May you find meaning and purpose in all of the things going on in your life. And if you are facing a good deal of suffering, may you realize that even though life brings suffering, how you deal with the suffering is what brings meaning into your life. Don't let your life be defined by suffering, but how you deal with it. We are in the 11th chapter of the book of Zechariah, continuing our journey through this great book, and we have hit a pace here in the 11th chapter where we're slowing down, working our way through what I might be alone in this. I haven't heard anyone else say this, and this is just my own life of Bible study. I think that the 11th chapter of Zechariah is one of the more overlooked prophetic chapters in the Bible for its importance. I think it might be the most pivotal chapter in the Old Testament in regards to what happens at Calvary. Maybe it is rivaled by the great 53rd chapter of Isaiah, where we get the intense detail of the death of Christ on the cross. But I don't know that anything beats what Zechariah 11 has to say, because what it has to say is prophetic for what is happening in the land of Israel in the time of Christ. It gives us the very definition of the breaking of covenant. It shows us the terms by which God would break covenant with Israel that releases them from the Mosaic. And this is picked up in the New Testament, and it is run with in practice, if not in theory. What I mean by that is we'll see it play out in the Gospels. We don't see the New Testament writers cling to this passage very often, though we do see it misattributed at least once, as it is quoted in part and attributed to Jeremiah. Some could argue that that's because Zechariah didn't write this portion of the letter. Either way, that misattribution in the New Testament, I think, has kept Bible students from really digging in properly to this passage, because they're running off to Jeremiah to find Calvary prophetic passages, and they're missing this great one from Zechariah 11. Listen to the last couple of podcasts and lead us into where we are today, because at this point, we're in the 6th verse where God says, "I will no longer pity the inhabitants of the land, says the Lord, but indeed I will give everyone into his neighbor's hand and into the hand of his king. They shall attack the land, and I will not deliver them from their hand." And so we see a God who is obviously fed up with the way Israel has been acting and the way they've responded. And at this point in the prophecy, he has no pity left. "I will no longer pity the inhabitants of the land." And for God to get to a place of no pity, we are looking at a very unusual time in the timeline of biblical prophecy. God has always had pity. He has always spared. He's always been long-suffering and merciful. But now we will see Jesus provide a way out for those believers who are left in Jerusalem at the time of when this prophecy comes to pass. But God is telling them that there's going to be no pity on this land and on this system. In fact, "I will give everyone into his neighbor's hand and into the hand of his king." That phrase, "into the hand of his king," is interesting, because you know we're placing this prophecy in the time of Christ and post-Calvary, where the Mosaic system is judged. Israel doesn't have a king. I know we call King Herod king, but technically they didn't look at Herod as their king. At best, Herod is a political king, but national king would have been Caesar in Rome. But he's not Israel's king. So to say in verse 6, "I'll give him into the hand of his king, they shall attack the land and I will not deliver them from their hand." It's the king that's going to attack the land. And that's what happens at AD 70 when Rome attacks Jerusalem. But that phrase, "their king," always kind of struck me. Because it's as if God is saying that the Israel will look at Caesar as their king, which we know they did not. However, John chapter 19, listen to this exchange between Pilate and the leaders of Israel. John chapter 19, verses 14 and 15. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." And Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Now, did you catch that? You could call that blasphemy, because these are the chief priests. They have got to see God as their king, but when needing their political ends, their political aims met, they're willing to say Caesar is their king. This is a prophecy being fulfilled from Zechariah 11:6, their king, and that king is going to destroy the land. Listen to this prophecy. I included this in our book Between the Pieces about this passage from Genesis 49:10. "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people." So that tells us that, first of all, the scepter is what a king carries. It's a symbol of his kingship. And that prophecy from Genesis 49, this is a Jacob prophecy over his children as he's dying, and he prophesies over Judah, from whom, by the way, Jesus comes, the tribe of Judah. And he's declaring that Shiloh's going to come and the people are going to obey him, and they're going to do it in a way that people are always subject to their king. Jesus, from Judah, is a peace declarer. He is the one who is always spreading peace. And so the chief priests are aware of this quote from the Torah. They know that out of Judah comes peace. And yet they deny Christ as king. They claim Caesar as king. And I think, if nothing else, this passage sets us in the time of Christ as much as any passage in Zechariah 11. Now, if that be the case, as you move forward in Zechariah 11, you know where you are. Now you've got a timing, and then you can begin to prepare to see what happens in Zechariah 11 as if it is fulfilled in the timing of the death of Christ, and that helps us with this passage. We will work on into 7 tomorrow. I'll see you then. God bless.